Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
It's the Mag Show. To say we're late starting really doesn't cover it, because we are an hour behind when we normally started, and we did plan to go back half an hour, but not 50 minutes, which we've currently got to. So we're here to discuss the week's Mac news and everything that's gone on. There's a little bit actually this week we can talk about, which isn't too bad. We have some very, very special people who've joined us at the very last minute and saved our bacon, because unfortunately some work commitments have intervened. Andy Anatko is supposed to be here, but he's had something come up and he's had to dump at the last minute. Will Green's had to bail as well at the last minute. And Don was not going to be here because of work commitments as well. Carl Swagger's working tomorrow morning, so he can't do the show tonight. And of course, Carl's been pulled into the office, so he doesn't get home till 5 o'clock. He's had to work all day, which is horrific. Joining me to discuss the Mac news, very kindly, Paul Wheatley from The Gamer Show.
Hello.
Yay. How you doing, bud?
I'm not too bad, thank you. My debut on the Mac show.
You've never been on here. You've never been on here.
No. Yeah, I think I've been invited a couple of times.
And that's the end of the show.
Good night, everyone.
All right, let's all go have a drink.
I'll stuff this.
Done.
Next to him is Jeff Gamma. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing good. And just to screw with you, I'll talk.
Norman Collier.
I'm sorry. That was a horrible thing for me to do.
I can't. Wheatley can't even heckle without dropout.
Sorry, have I dropped out?
Yeah, we heard nothing of what you said when your intro. And Jeff does Norman Collier like nobody else I've ever heard. That's great for a man who didn't even know
Norman. Professional.
You need to Google Norman Collier, mate. You're not a million miles away from the looks as well, maybe. Next to Jeff, Kelly Gamont on 8-bit.
Yes, I am.
It looks
8-bit and proud.
Good girl. Good girl. I wear my 8-bit on the outside. How you been?
Good. Apparently I'm a little pixely around the edges, but yeah, okay. Otherwise fine.
It's fine. At least you got lip sync there. And true. Last but by no means least, DHM. On equally choppy vision, it would seem.
Me!
Viva choppy vision.
I've got the bandwidth seems to have gone to Pacola here, so.
That's not my end, I'm pretty sure.
No, not.
Pixel vision all day. Never mind. We'll get through.
So, Ewan, I just looked up Norman Collier on Wikipedia.
And
the description they have of this guy is so incredibly brilliant. Norman Collier was a British comedian who achieved popularity following television appearances in the 1970s. He was best known for his faulty microphone routine and for his chicken impressions.
There you go. You've got to Google that on YouTube, mate. Definitely. Got to go for YouTube. His microphone stuff was really good. Now you've said the chicken impression, I've got a vague recollection.
He passed away not that long ago.
Yeah.
How did I not know about this guy before now?
Well, you'll be fully conversed with him by the end of today. There we go.
Oh, no.
Yes.
And your impression of the broken mic, I was saying, is equally good. And he made a living out of that.
I'm in the wrong line of work.
Absolutely. The week in Apple news, what's gone on? What's happened? We've had a review. Thank you. We didn't get any reviews last week, so I was really upset about it. So if you've got a review, please send it in, because what happens in the iTunes rankings, I've kind of figured out, is if you've got more reviews, you don't fluctuate as much in the chart and you stay a little bit higher, you see. So because Greeny's got 278 reviews and we've got 87 reviews or something like that. So we need another 100 and we can stick around next to Greeny. Because, I mean, he stayed at number 8, didn't drop out of the top 10. He hadn't made a podcast for frigging 6 months. So it must have been the reviews that were keeping him up. That's the way I figured it. We got one from John, who's in Australia. Superb Mac podcast with all the Mac news as well as entertaining banter from an excellent range of hosts. I couldn't agree more, mate. Wonderful selection this week. And Finster has said, yowza. Best Mac show ever. Will Green's very funny. Love this show. Informative but fun. I don't know what the but fun bit is.
Oh
no, no, no!
I did. What? I didn't say anything.
So the week in Apple. but moving on. 50 billionth app has been downloaded. Woo! Last time it was a Japanese lady that did the 10 billionth or something, wasn't it? And someone called, I wrote his name down and now it's gone, Brandon Ashmore, thanks to Paul Wheatley, has won it. He gets a 10,000 voucher. But they gave $500 worth of vouchers to the next 50 people or something, didn't they?
Yeah.
Well, that's really nice.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But 50 billion. I mean, the rate.
Now, I did the math.
Oh, good, dude. Yes.
So 5 years to hit 50 billion downloads, to hit hit the next 50 billion mark at the current rate, 2 years. But since more and more people are downloading stuff, it may very well be less.
Yeah, so the current rate will be logarithmic to the original start point. So you need to track that curve up, mate.
Right. So
could be tomorrow.
So they actually hit that. Within a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. I just can't comprehend 50 billion of anything.
Of course, the 10 billion app that was downloaded was courtesy of a siren system company just down the road from me.
They were the app. Yes.
The 10 billion. I was hoping to do a double on the 50 billion myself, but obviously I've been passed over.
Did you have a tenner on the William Hill thing?
Yeah, but I'll be the 50, but it can't hurt. What's the worst that can happen?
Were you trying to get Arswiper into the store just in time?
That would have been too awesome.
What was
it? I noticed that if it was a UK person, they wouldn't have given 10 grand in pounds. Whereas if you bought something from Apple for 10 grand, it would also cost £10,000 in the UK.
Yeah, good
point. But they weren't
going
to equal it to pounds in the UK, which is just wrong.
So what was the app? Bejeweled or something like that?
No, it was Google Maps.
Google Maps?
It was.
No, I'm kidding.
That's got to hurt.
No, it was Say the Same Thing.
Yes, it was Say the Same Thing. It's a game.
Right.
And it's cute and it's fun.
Okay.
You know, with Google Now coming out in iOS, there was a very, very high chance that it was going to be the Google app as well. They must have been sweating something.
Google Now, yeah. I don't think they'd have cared, but it's not great.
Do you think they have to prove it was actually the exact 50 billionth app? I guess they don't they?
How could they do that? When you think how many apps are going to be downloaded every second, every millisecond, how could they possibly precisely say this one here, this one bang on here is the 50 millionth? It must be like in a range of X amount of milliseconds. It's then a lottery after that, you know, the 100,000 folk or something like that. Must be.
Something's just changed, like going through a fog bank, mate. You've just been in choppy vision with horrible audio, and then all of a sudden you've gone crystal clear with great audio. And it was like
it faded.
Yeah, it will go back the other way.
Right. So, but my point.
something stopped downloading in Scotland.
In Scotland, yes, yeah. the entirety of Scotland. Everybody stopped using the internet.
You all share the same Dropbox account, from what I understand.
The pub's opened.
Don't be silly, man. They never closed.
Yeah.
Well, then they got a new delivery.
Someone's just popped out for a wee fag. And that's what's let it off. No, Americans, no. Drop scotch, says Windrider in the chat room. Spot on. 50 billion is a lot of money for developers. Any significance beyond the fact that they've gone past 50 billion? I mean, I can't think of anything that's remotely close to that in terms of app downloads.
Amazon. Well, they've paid out over 9 billion to developers.
Wow.
So that's a lot of money. And the fact that so many people are downloading so many apps shows, I think, that concerns that people losing interest in the iPhone and iPad is off base.
Yeah, I mean,
that to me is the thing about it. I think that it's just proof they're not going anywhere.
They're not leaving. Yeah, Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I've just finished doing the photo show, and I read a story out there that Nikon were over the moon because they sold 34 million cameras last 12 months, and Apple sold that last quarter.
Or as Apple calls it, Tuesday.
Yes.
It is. It's true. Absolutely. And their cameras don't do apps, which they're really, really upset about, I'm sure. Now, I'm going to need someone to explain this to me properly because I'm not the greatest financial whiz in the world, but Apple have dropped a bombshell by releasing bonds. Now,
okay.
So they've got... go ahead, Jeff, because I really hoped you were the person that was going to lead this one.
Me too.
Oh. All right, then. Okay, so Apple released, what was it, like $17 billion in bonds?
Yeah.
It was a crazy amount. Okay. So what they needed to do was to have cash to start doing the massive stock buyback that they want to do.
Mm.
Now, they have plenty of cash. I mean, this is like sofa change for Apple.
Mm.
But that significant of amount of money isn't just sitting as loose change in the United States. So what they would have to do is repatriate money or take money that has always been in foreign accounts and bring it into the United States.
It's like three quarters of their total cash volume is overseas, isn't it? Three quarters.
It's two thirds.
Right.
It's a substantial amount. Yeah.
It's enough. Yeah.
Yeah. So to bring that money into the United States, they immediately take a 35% tax hit just for bringing it into the country. And that's an unacceptable tax hit. And investors would totally flip if Apple did that. It would be fiscally irresponsible for Apple to bring the money back into this country. So what they did instead was raised debt. And for the first time in years, Apple actually has debt now. But they did it as bonds where they're probably paying 1% or something ridiculous because their credit is so good. So by doing the bonds, they can buy back all of their stock, save a fortune in the process because they didn't have to pay 35% tax just for bringing money into the country. So that's what the whole bond thing is.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that they're overseas stuff. Now, there was the Mac Pro build thing in the States. I was on Tech News Today at the time, and I said, oh, I smell a bit of a rat here because they want to get a bit of a tax holiday to get some cash back in. And they have got a little bit back in, but they've not got anywhere near the quantity that they're talking about. It's something like $145 billion in cash reserves, of which $110 billion is overseas, which is just phenomenal. I mean, that's also like a money sum. You know, why is there no money in the world? Because it's in a bank account with Apple.
Yes, it is. And there's a lot of people that are looking at that money going, how could Apple take that much money out of the country? But the reality is they didn't take all of that money out of the country. I'm sure there's some percentage, but not all of it. Remember, Apple's a worldwide company and they're selling gobs of stuff in other countries. And so the money that they're raising through sales in those other countries, they're not going to bring it into the United States because they're going to have a big, in essence, they will be penalized for bringing the money over here.
Yeah, and I'm penalized. Is, you know, paying taxes is not a penalty, though. To be fair,
no, paying taxes is not a penalty.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a necessary thing. If you want to have the services that we take for granted, no matter what country you're in, you have to pay taxes to make it happen. It's just how it works.
Yeah, that's why I think I find it hard because you know I'm sitting looking at that going, well, you know, why is the potholes in the streets in various parts of the world or in the country, and why is the federal issues of funding for schools and interplanetary space programs and so on, and one company is sat on $145 billion and won't bring it through the door because someone says it's financially irresponsible to bring back money and pay tax. I have a bit of a problem with that.
Now, they do pay tax on overseas money.
Yeah, they pay it in the country of origin.
Yeah. Right.
If it's in something like Ireland or something like that, it's really relatively low.
Right. And this is actually something that that is not exclusive to Apple.
No, absolutely.
Big companies all over the world look at where they can put their money so that they minimize what their tax responsibility will be. And then that's what they do. And I've heard that there's talk in Europe about changing some of the EU tax laws, because I guess it's a big problem with companies just funneling money all around all the time through little countries to stay ahead of taxes.
Because they're part of Europe, Liechtenstein have a corporate tax rate of 3%. The UK tax rate is 20%. So any sales in this country are automatically taxable, but the corporation sets up in Liechtenstein and sends a royalty charge over, which is nearly equal to the total quantity that the company has sold in this country. So all the money leaves to go and pay to Liechtenstein to only pay 3% corporate tax to cover a royalty fee, which is just a BS charge.
Wow. So what it comes down to is companies have found ways to work all the way up to the edge of whatever their tax laws are. And if we want to see change where they are paying a more fair tax rate, then tax laws have to change.
Government aren't clever enough. That's the problem. The government are not clever enough to come up with a tax law that a tax lawyer can't beat.
And of course, they move compared to company lawyers. Government lawyers move at the speed of a glacier in the middle of an ice age. I mean, by the time they've identified a tax loophole, you're like four governments down the line, and they're still arguing about what to call the new bill that they're going to draft to change it.
And don't even get started on lobbying.
Yeah.
Which is
because that's the next
corruption
thing
of government.
Yeah, governments, there's a lot of situations where governments actually slightly benefits them in some scenarios for leave it as it is, because those loopholes are benefiting some of them or people close to them or suppliers of them and so on and so forth.
And on a bright note, Tim has been called to account for Apple's tax practices.
No, he hasn't.
He's to testify in front of a Senate committee over tax practices.
Okay, so... Right. He's not being called to task.
Doesn't mean he's in trouble. That's
what No. Okay.
Yeah. So he's not in trouble. And excuse me. And while there may be some questions that do relate to Apple tax practices, this is not an inquiry into Apple's tax practices. This is an ongoing investigation that the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations is conducting into tax laws and the issues that the government is facing, not being able to collect taxes, and that businesses are facing, not feeling comfortable bringing money back into the country where they're going to suddenly get hit with a really big tax. And they're trying to figure out what to do about this. That's what this hearing is about. So the expectation is that when Tim goes in, he's going to be talking about how tax law impacts big corporations, and will be championing some major changes to tax laws to make it easier for companies to bring money into the United States without having to take such a big tax hit.
You want there to be a Nixon moment, don't you? Where he says, oh, gosh, I can do whatever I want. I'm the president.
That was, I think, the single best British Nixon impression I've ever heard.
I am not a criminal.
Actually, I will go so far as to say that's better than many American Nixon impressions. Well done.
It is, yeah.
It's far better than the Nixon impression from Doctor Who.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll tell you as a compliment.
Okay, he was, I will say he was passable. The Doctor Who one.
Yeah, well, the fact that they did the whole makeup thing to make him look more like Richard Nixon, we had the visual, and so the voice was more plausible.
I've got better as I've got older, because now my jowls wobble. That helps. Not a criminal. You've got to get a bit of lower jaw movement to get it right. AppleCare. There's a suggestion that AppleCare is going to change, and actually, there's talk of coverage of all devices. which with one subscription, which would be absolutely incredible. It would, so that would be like a device insurance policy, I guess.
Mm. I can't have see that being cheap, though.
Say again, DHM.
Well, AppleCare itself is pretty expensive, given that, you know, realistically now it only covers the third year, because the European warranties have pushed most of AppleCare's coverage out to 2 years.
Good point.
So you're paying all this for just the one extra year. And it's pretty expensive for that. I suspect that if it's rolled out in this way, the words value for and money might be quite far down the description.
Right.
You know, in the United States, it's a much better deal, because it gives us two extra years instead of only one extra year.
Yeah, I mean, we've got the European tax law tells us you have to have 2 years coverage on warranty for all electronic devices. So
now, from what I understand, the AppleCare still can be a better option, even with the laws that you have, because with AppleCare you don't have as high a threshold to prove that you should have warranty coverage. Because there's like a 90-day window or a 6-month window where after that it's your responsibility to prove that that whatever is wrong was a defect from design or from the factory.
Yeah,
there's a couple of things going on. There's the 1 year manufacturer's warranty, which is fairly extensive, and after that in Europe you've got the 2 year European warranty. But the caveat with that is that if you're into the second year, you have to be able to prove that the defect was there when the device was manufactured. However, there is also a third and less well clarified strand, which is that an electronic device should have an expectation of a lifespan. And then there's a sort of wriggle room and a negotiation as to, you know, what is the expected lifespan of, say,
yeah, I mean, you
screen on an iMac, and most people would suggest that 2 years is not the expected lifespan of a screen, you know.
Well, you've got other legislation in the UK then that would take that on for expectation of performance, wouldn't you?
Yes. Are you basically saying to Apple, yes, I know, I realise this is outside of the window of the 1 year warranty. It wasn't a defect that was there when it was manufactured, because it's been working for 2 years. However, a reasonable person would assume that a screen on an item as expensive as an iMac would last more than 2 years. And quite often, that's generally with my customers, that's the line I've sent them back to Apple with when they've been having the heebie-jeebies at the cost of these things. And 90% of the time it works, because if you speak to the high enough person up at Apple, not the original guy on the phone, but a manager, they actually have training and awareness of the expectation of life span side of things, which the lower AppleCare guys don't have. So you can normally get up to 2 years on a, you know, replacement on things like screens, logic boards, you know, the big stuff that should really be holding together for 3 or 4 years.
Windrider in the chat room says he's very impressed with your capabilities, but he thinks you're taking the stuttery mic routine a little too far, DHM.
What is watching, watching?
Very good, mate. Very good.
I've never used my AppleCare. Has anybody got any? I've only really used the kind of going into the Apple store and speaking at the Genius and getting something dealt with there, but I have AppleCare on my iMac and I've never used it. So I've never had need to.
No, I haven't.
AppleCare, okay, I haven't had to use it for a display yet, but I have friends that I know personally, so as close as I can get to have actually done it, who've had problems with their iMacs or their MacBook Pro or their MacBook Air, where it's a display issue, and they take it in, and the first thing they're asked is, do you have AppleCare? They say yes, and they say no problem, and the display's either swapped out or they're just given a new computer. And when I've had iPhone problems in the past, and I've walked in and said, here's what's going on, as soon as they know I have AppleCare, they say, here's your new iPhone. It's just that simple.
Right.
I've had that as well, but I've never been asked about AppleCare. And I've had Probably about 50% of having to pay for a replacement of devices, smash screens and whatnot, and 50% getting them absolutely free. And I don't have Apple Care on any of my devices, like iPhone, iPad, so on and so forth. It just doesn't seem to be as prevalent in the UK, perhaps, is that?
I think the argument's less as well, though, as Jeff said there. I mean, they've got the European legislation backing up. Apple know that if customers walk in, they're a lot better informed now through programs like Watchdog and so on of what their consumer rights are. And I think also as well, I think the British have got better at complaining in the last 5 years. I certainly have never been backwards at going forward and saying change it. And when they come up with an argument, it's not working properly, change it. And they do it. I've always had stuff changed, but the wife dropped the telephone down the toilet last night, so I don't think I'm going to get away with that one.
With AppleCare, we do suffer Apple's bizarre idea of what the dollar pound exchange rate actually is, which does straight off the bat make it far less effective over here.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had a couple of questions in. First one's from Mo. And she says, it looks like the hard drive on my MacBook Pro may be on its way out. I'm occasionally getting odd fizzing noises. And this morning when I started up, the sound of the hard drive starting up took a while. It took a while before the We Are On sound came through, which is normally straight away. It was about 1 to 2 seconds, which is never good. So here's my question. Is it worth getting an SSD for the MacBook Pro to replace the current hard drive or go for a normal hard drive? New installer software or reinstall from a disk image, and she's got the spec that she's sent through here: 15-inch mid 2009 MacBook Pro, 2.8 gigahertz Intel Core 2 Duo, 4 gig of RAM. And she said, "Is it worth me?" She's using 206 gigabytes or 499 gigabytes, so 256 would still work for her maybe. Is it worth upgrading the RAM at the same time as well? Other than that, I've no plans to buy a new machine at the moment.
I'd say stick money in the RAM, buy 8 gigs of RAM and put a 500 gig new hard drive in it.
So, I mean, a 500 gig hard drive is going to cost her about £45.
Yep.
RAM's going to be about the same for 4 gig.
That would definitely be the more economical way to go. If she wants to feel like she just got a whole computer upgrade, get the SSD because it makes a huge difference in overall performance in a MacBook Pro.
I stuck a 256 in my 2008 MacBook Pro, and it flies. Absolutely. It's the one that DHM's on. It doesn't do very good video, but...
In my experience, because I've upgraded a number of machines, and I've had the... I've done the RAM upgrade, and the RAM upgrade is nice, but in my last machine, I did the data doubler dance, and took out the optical drive, put the rotational drive in the optical slot, and then added an SSD, and I boot off the SSD.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like getting a whole new computer. Mm-hmm. So it was totally worth it. And because I did the data doubler, I still had all my stuff on that other drive. I just didn't have an optical drive anymore. So what I did was I spent the extra, I think it was like $15 at OWC, the World Computing, and I got an external case for my optical drive. So if I ever need it, you know, on the off chance I actually do buy a CD, it happens once in a while, then I can still rip it and I still have access to everything that I have on optical media now. However, now the machine is way faster and it actually has more space because I just took the old drive and moved it over and added a new hard drive. And then what I did was I did not import... I didn't use the migraine assistant to move anything over. I just installed fresh. And if you've used it, you know I did not mispronounce it.
Yeah, and no, I mean, I would have said, unless you've got anything that's not backed up, back it up before you do anything, but I would have just gone for a clean install if you haven't got a ton of software to get back on there.
Mm-hmm.
Start from scratch again, particularly with Mountain Lion. If you've had a good, you've been upgrading since Snow Leopard, it's quite nice to just do a clean install and know that breathe it out and you've just got a plain Jane back to basic system, which you can kind of build just what you need back onto it again. Although don't forget, you could always, with the data doubler drive thing, if you're feeling brave, you could always homebrew your own Fusion drive in there.
Oh,
I'm told, though, that that Fusion Drive's not quite as good as booting off of SSD and having data on spinning. I've got no experience of that myself, but I've heard that that's the case.
Well, I run my MacBook Pro here has got a 512 SSD in it and then a 750 gig spinning drive, and I, in terms of data access for what's on the files, I can't tell the difference in file access, but I can tell the difference if I was starting the machine or starting a program up. I mean, Photoshop for me is off and on every day, and that starts up in a heartbeat off the SSD, and it never started that quick off the 750 drive when it was the lead drive. So, definite change. There you go, man. I know the stream's just dropped out while she was listening to that, so you'll have to download it and get the thing back as well.
You asked the question, and then the stream fell off.
We said yes.
You don't get the full SSD speed anyway with the 2009 MacBook Pro because it's only SATA 2, not SATA 3. So you could save yourself some money by making sure you only buy a SATA 2 SSDs, which is slightly cheaper, but don't expect the full speed that you'd get from a 2011 MacBook Pro with an SSD conversion or a MacBook Air with an SSD in it. It isn't going to get that fast because you can't run the data through the drive fast enough. But it's still good. It's still a lot faster than spinning.
Yeah, it's a dramatic upgrade because the machine I upgraded is the one before that one. I had a late 08 unibody MacBook, and that was the one that I did the data doubler dance with. And it was amazing just in the boot time to go from rotational drive to SSD was really impressive. I've done RAM upgrades in every computer I've ever had, and the RAM upgrade is nice, but going from rotational drive to SSD was stupendous. So that was it's a nice little bump if you're going to do it's good to do the memory. Most of the reason I end up doing memory is because I want to extend the life of my machine. And a lot of times, at least, in the olden days, RAM requirements would go up and up and up dramatically in a much shorter amount of time than what they do now. And so there was a big jump between, 512 megabytes of memory and a gigabyte of memory and that kind of thing. Yes, that's how long ago it was. Shut up. And so when you make those kind of leaps, you get a nice little upgrade. But mostly I was doing it to make sure I was going to meet system requirements for software that I needed going forward. That isn't as big a deal anymore because either the computer will have enough RAM in it, when it ships, or you'll end up getting... the RAM requirements don't change as dramatically as what they used to. So it's a nice one, but really going from rotational to SSD was the one that made me go, holy crap, why didn't I do this a year ago? Or five.
Yeah.
To me, it's a little more expensive, but absolutely worth every penny.
Excellent. So. There we go. We've got some iPhone 6 specs that are supposedly leaked that are coming out. Yeah, no, I get that. That's fine, don't worry. But we've had an email. We'll talk about the iPhone 6 spec stuff in a second, but we've had an email from Gordo who says, all the talk about the new phone in the autumn with iOS 7, but that doesn't seem to make any sense to me. Surely they have to announce iOS 7 at least 3 months before, or maybe at WWDC, so that they can go through the beta testing process with developers, by which time, of course, YouTube will be awash with every new feature. And by the time we get the hardware, the hype is gone. Also, a new OS usually means updates to keep apps such as iPhoto, iWork, etc. And 1 year they released the whole lot in one go. It did cause some fun. What does everyone think would be a realistic and sensible timescale for these things? On another point, I believe that iOS 7 won't be a radical difference as they're trying to blur the lines between iOS and macOS. So I don't think they will make them look too far apart or separate. More the opposite, in fact, unless they change the OS to be more Johnny Ive 2. What's the feeling on iOS 7 versus release of hardware?
I think it has to be. There's no way they could bring out iOS 7 on the same keynote as they release the new phone, unless they do a lead time on the phone as well, which doesn't make any sense either. They have to, as the chap said in the email there, you have to give time for developers to develop and test it and make sure their apps work. It just doesn't make any sense for it to have any more than a couple of months. Any less than a couple of months.
So what's your call on release date for hardware? September?
Release date for hardware, September. I don't think they're going to do any change this year.
Right.
And announce at WWDC. I'd be very shocked if it changes dramatically.
Right. Jeff, any thoughts?
All right, we will see previews of iOS 7 and OS 10.10.9 at WWDC. No new hardware. And then in September, we will get new iPhones and probably new iPads. And iOS 7 will release a couple days before the hardware does.
Right.
And that gives developers the time they need to hopefully get up to speed on what's happening with the new OS so that they can have their stuff ready to go on iOS 7 release day.
Good.
Yep.
Any other thoughts, Kelly, GHM?
Yeah, I think it's these days there aren't, just aren't any more surprises left in the box from Apple. There's a cycle for the hardware, there's a cycle for the software. We've seen what they do before, and they do it because it's the most effective way for the company to do it, and that is not going to change just because it's a different version number. Whatever worked best last time works best this time.
Kelly, finish off.
Well, I think they're gonna do whatever makes sense for them. And last year, it made sense to they've always sort of done the iOS stuff at WWDC. And that's, honestly, I think iOS development is why WWDC sells out now. People don't remember that it didn't used to. Mm-hmm. So, like, they used to invite people. They would reach out to Mac developers and go, do you want to come to WWDC? Like, we have a spot for you. Those were the days. And so I think...
Oh, good times.
Yeah, I think what they're going to do is whatever makes sense for them. I think they've really sort of locked this in with... we're gonna release a developer preview at DubDub in June, and then we're gonna have stuff come out later in the year. I like that they've taken the iPod event and turned it into the iPhone event. I think that's a nice time to do it. They finally did something that I always said was a good idea, which is if you're gonna release new stuff, release it right before Christmas, not right after, which is what they used to do in January at Macworld. And I think it makes it easier for everybody if they're putting something out in October and then just kick back and watch it happen instead of working, you know, flat out, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours of overtime to make sure that something gets out the door the second or third week of January. So I think this is probably going to be a lot better setup. And I'm looking forward to it because I actually bought a 4S out of contract so that I could get on the evolution track for the phones instead of the evolution track. So I am looking forward to this one. What I'm not looking forward to is what's already started, which is the wave of iOS 7 specs and iPhone 5 plus 1 specs and designs and blurry cam and all of that. I'm tired of it. And even if Apple came out and announced it, I don't think it would stop anybody from continuing in this manner. And that to me is the worst of it, is just having to wade through all of the, I think this might be what it's going to look like, or, you know, my best friend's brother's cousin's sister's girlfriend saw Tim Cook pass out at 31 Flavors last night. I'm over it. And I want it to stop. And so, like, wading through all of that to get to actual news is the part that I find frustrating about this. We know it's coming and now we're all just hanging out and waiting for it stretch of time. I don't like that, but, I mean, we all know there's a new one coming, and it's going to be awesome, and I can't wait to see it.
There's a comment made in the chat room that made me think, Haswell processors. I mean, there was a story I kind of glanced over this week about the first Windows computers come out with Haswell processors in them. How long before Apple follows suit?
Well, I think it has to be. Is Apple not normally very, very quick off the mark with new Intel processors?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But they're behind Windows, though, here.
Yeah, we don't want to say that on this show. That's yeah, that phrase doesn't work. I'm not responding to that.
No, okay, so the way you phrase it on this show is Windows jumped the gun.
Ah, yes. Right. Exactly. Yeah. There's someone with a new host, Haswell processor machine with it poised to go out of an upstairs window.
Yeah, you're right. With Windows computers showing up with the Haswell processors, it seems reasonable to ask, where are the Macs?
I you don't think there's going to be hardware, though? So, well, we're not talking about iPhones and things like that, because I agree with everybody in September, but traditionally, we have gotten new hardware, new MacBooks. MacBook Air was released. The Retina MacBook Pro was released at WWDC. So it's likely they're just holding off, and I would have thought, for to release new hardware.
But, I mean, the one thing I would say is that the Retina MacBook Pro had developer written all over it. Mm-hmm. That was absolutely a developer machine.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
yeah, because you need a Retina screen to develop for a Retina screen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There is that. So, sure, we may see processor bumps at WWDC. It could happen. And you're right. There is a proven track record of some hardware announcements at the event.
Mm.
Yep.
My favorite actually was the original EyeSight camera.
Yeah.
I remember watching the thing as it was happening, because that was back when they would live stream that keynote. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, and they said, and everyone that's here is getting one. And it was such an Oprah moment.
Oh, totally. There's bread and fish for everybody.
Well, yeah.
Right.
It's funny that they're doing that. I want new Power Macs, or what do they call them? Towers, Mac Pro. New towers.
New towers.
47-pound slabs of aluminum. That's what they should announce.
I want X-Serve.
Because anybody who's going to not flinch at dropping the amount of an economical car to buy a computer is going to be sitting in that room.
Yeah. True. And one of them, we know we were sitting in a pub with him last week. Tim Cook's coffee thing has topped out. It has gone for $610,000 with a last second bid, like an eBay auction, from a bloke who started with an A and ended with an S and had some asterisks in between. if you would like to make a name up for this man, and the first word isn't ass, then please, Phil, go ahead.
It is. It was Dr. Happy Mac. He's boy under his company, Arswipers.
Arswipers. Tim, I've got a new app, and I want you to promote it.
Not like it. I have got $610,000 lying around the office.
You should have spent it on your frigging broadband then. So the other thing is, Logitech have released new little pamphlety folder things for the iPad and the iPad Mini, and they're nice. There's one with a little keyboard in it that looks absolutely super gorgeous and is very very surfacey like in terms of the keyboard, and expensive. But the one thing I would say is because Apple stuff ain't cheap either. Why is it that Logitech do Apple stuff better than Apple do? And they do it week in, week out, day in, day out.
Because Apple are shite at accessories.
They are, but I don't see why they're so bad.
They don't care. It's like they're bad at cloud services, because they don't care.
Apple don't think you should have cases on these beautiful devices that they've spent months and years developing and refining. The idea of putting a case on these things is almost blasphemy to them. So they don't want to make good stuff for you to cover up this beautiful industrial design.
But you want to keep it beautiful. That's the point.
Oh, yeah. From a consumer's point of view, you do. But from their point of view, I'd be very interested to see how much of the Apple executive team have cases on their iPhones and iPads. I would imagine the answer is zero.
Oh, do you think there's an edict?
I don't know what that word is.
There's a threat.
A declaration from on high that this is what things are, and there is no room for argument. Well, you know what it is? It's when your mom says, because I said so, that's an edict.
Ah, yeah. Right, okay. You learn something new every day.
So spake Tim, so shall it be.
You can have the case on your iPhone or the electrodes on your testicles. It's up to you.
Well, wait. What's the voltage? I want to make an informed decision here.
Good point. I hadn't thought of that. While we're on the subject of accessories, Mophie have released a new juice pack for the iPhone 5 that's a little slimmer, a little lighter, a little bit more powerful. Looks very good. Mm. Looks very good.
I really
good.
Like Mophie stuff. It's nice.
Well, I have a Mophie juice pack in a drawer behind me here, and I stopped carrying it around just because it was too damn heavy. And it wasn't heavy particularly. It's just the whole package just suddenly got heavy.
The only problem with the Mophie things is over time, the little clip thing wears away. So the bit that kind of clips the top and the bottom part together, that gets looser and looser over time. So eventually you just end up losing half of it at some point, because it just does, it hasn't got that kind of longevity to kind of stay together. But otherwise, I like the Mophie stuff.
Yep. Pricing's usually a bit high on these. They're about £80 a piece, and they're only something like $89. So we get humped again over here for them.
Yep.
We need the EU to take people to task. And Siri has got very pissy with people. It's starting to give out smart ass quotes now when the sentences are too long. If you bring that sentence in for a fitting, I'll have it shortened by Wednesday.
That's the way to compete with Google Voice, isn't it? Just to insult your customers.
Yeah, which is apparently a quote from MASH. And a sentence should contain no unnecessary words, a paragraph no unnecessary sentences, for the same reason that a drawing should have no unnecessary lines and a machine no unnecessary parts. Can you ask me again in fewer words, please?
Why don't they just
no,
press the button, you ask Siri the question, you wait 10 minutes, and then it comes back and says, you don't deserve me, and you never hear from it again?
No, because that would
why
be.
Why don't you just go to full-on passive-aggressive girlfriend? Well, if you don't know, I was going to say that. Tell you, yeah.
That's a conversation with my wife.
Yeah, I was, it's relationships like that that caused me to drink.
Siri was mean to me. Pass me the bottle.
To an Android phone, you can actually switch to an Android phone for Google Voice on the excuse that your iPhone doesn't understand you.
Because he was being mean to me.
It's no, not you,
we're not
it's me.
Happy together. She understands. We don't understand each other. We've got a free relationship. I'm with Google now.
Can you imagine someone sat there with an iPhone and Android phone and going to the Android phone, tell him he was mean to me? And the Android phone actually has a pattern that it repeats that triggers something in Siri that starts an argument between the two of them.
Oh my God.
That would be so cool. That algorithm's got to be written. Got to be.
Now I'm wondering what I can ask Siri to get her to say. Well, if you don't know, I'm not about to tell you.
Yeah, Siri, guess what I'm going to ask you? We're going to try that.
If you understood me, you wouldn't have to ask that.
Yeah, but all the time I'm talking to you, I'm thinking a Google Voice.
Oh, that's so wrong.
Oh, man. If I hold you next to the other ear, it sounds like someone else is asking. BlackBerry Messenger is coming to iOS.
Oh my God, the show's gotten entirely silly.
BlackBerry is coming to iOS.
BlackBerry Messenger
is coming to iOS. You're not grasping what I'm saying here. It's a contamination.
You're trying to read me a news story from 2008.
It's like 28 days more later. It's a zombie attack on iOS.
Yeah, because having a BBM on your iPod Touch, that's going to make you run out and buy a BlackBerry, isn't it?
Yeah, I find this a really odd move, because that's about the only thing that's keeping people with BlackBerry, as teenagers who can use BBM instead of text messaging.
It's killing hardware.
I have a theory on this.
Oh, Jeffrey, you've got full screen. Away you go. My arms are folded.
All right. So my theory is, even though this won't draw people in to buy BlackBerries, because realistically, how many people in the history of the universe have decided, you know, this iPhone just doesn't cut it for me. I'm going to go get a BlackBerry. Yeah, I don't see that happening. But what this does is ensure that major companies, corporations that rely on the BlackBerry services can continue to use those BlackBerry services, even as their employees push to use iPhones instead of BlackBerry phones. This way, the BlackBerry still gets to keep their big contracts. Mm-hmm. They'll sell the phones to the people that will buy them. And for everyone else, they can link into the service. They don't lose those big contracts.
So I think that's pretty forward thinking then, because that's changing the business model before you dinosaur out.
And yes. And I think that a lot of what they're looking at behind the scenes has to do with being a service company as opposed to a hardware company.
IBM.
But is BlackBerry Messenger, sorry, I don't know the kind of the ins and outs of this, is BlackBerry Messenger considered as secure as the whole BlackBerry mail infrastructure? Because I could totally see that argument if this was some way of accessing your BlackBerry email in an app like Good or something like that. But this is just the Messenger client.
Which, from what I understand, still uses the same secure server system their email. But I'm not 100% sure on that.
You can install your own server for that, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's part of Exchange. Or it's a Exchange.
The bookery in the chat room says you can get your own back on Siri. Put a Mophie juice back in and say that their ass looks big in it. Spot on.
Oh my gosh.
Spot on. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. They're wonderful. We had a bit of an outage this week. I actually remembered to click send on a ticket, and half an hour later, we're back up and running. It happens. Anyone who's got a server that doesn't occasionally go down, liar. It's an odd occasion. We've had a couple on the odd occasions in the last couple of weeks, but there we go. We're sorted now. UK2 are great. They're really good. We've been with them for a long, long time. I was with them before we even started doing British Tech Network, and they're going to be with us for a lot longer yet. I was talking to Craig the other week, and they've got a new service out now called Website Builder, which is brilliant. It's drag and drop. It's no harder than making it's easier than making a PowerPoint presentation. It's got a load of templates there. You can do e-commerce with it, do shopping, everything. So anything you want to do on the net, go for UK2, because they've got some fantastic services, loads and loads of good prices, and you get discounts as well. So go through BritishTechNetwork.com, click the sponsors link, click on their logo, then come back to the sponsors tab that's still open and use all those offer codes. Use the hell out of them and you'll save yourself an absolute fortune. There you go. UK2, support, please. Thank you very much. The Bash. The Bash is coming up. Paul has his ticket. DHM was the first person to buy a ticket.
And a curry ticket.
There are two events. On the 5th, we're going to have a curry. Now, there's two banners on the homepage. They're very close together, so we might need to push them apart a bit more. But the curry's the one underneath. If you buy a curry, you come for a curry at 9 p.m. on the 5th of July. That's a Friday. And you get the £10 that you spend on the ticket is the £10 that comes off your total bill at the end of the night. So you're not getting a free curry. You're getting a tenner off your total curry price. And then we're all going to wend our way away and hopefully still have some in reserve for the following day, because from 10 o'clock in the morning, people will start drifting in. We'll have a load of fun. We'll do all the podcasts. We'll do a whole load of other fun activities. And all you've got to do is pay one ticket, £20. That £20 gets you everything you can eat and drink in the day. Guaranteed. There is no food or beer charged against that. It's all inclusive. You don't have to bring anything if you don't want to drink or eat. It's up to you. If you've got real special dietary requirements, like you're a vegetarian, then I'm afraid it might be a bit of a meat fest, so you might want to bring a veggie burger and we'll get it cooked for you. Or if you're gluten-free or something like that, you might have to bring your own rolls, because I can't guarantee that we'll be able to get those. But I'll buy a bit of stuff. And kids come free. So anything that's under 12 gets in free of charge, can have a load of fun, and they can make all the noise that they want during the podcast, because anyone that complains about background noise, well, you should have come, because it was not that bad. There we go. So Saturday the 6th of July 2013, buy your ticket. I am warning you that you have this week and next week to buy your ticket. At the end of that, the tickets will go off sale. Absolutely, they will go off sale, because unless I get enough people for the bigger venue that I've booked, I've got to go and get a smaller venue, which I'll have to do at the moment, because we need a few more sales. Not loads, just a few, but we do need a few more to make sure that I can cover the price. It's £400 for the venue hire that we're at, but it's a beautiful place. It's a fantastically big hall with a lovely garden out the back that packs onto a cricket field, and it'll be absolutely stunning. So please come to the Bash, buy your tickets this week, without fail. Right, cool things. PW, you've got the box seat, mate. You going to start us off?
Grant, okay, let's hopefully my broadband is going to last out on this one. I have...
Oh, it's a demonstration. That's never good. A Blue Peter demonstration.
So, I would imagine most people listening to this podcast are familiar with the Super Nintendo. that was released a number of years ago. And most TVs these days don't actually allow you to plug a Super Nintendo in anymore because they need the old coax plug, and you have all sorts of problems around it. So this was a big pain of me. I have an old SNES and I have old games, and I really wanted to continue to play them, all the old Mario games, Jurassic Park games, and so on and so forth. And I came across this little amazing device. Now, if I'm holding up so everybody can see it. And basically what it is, if I put it to the side there, it's got a SNES port. So if you've got an old SNES controller, or you could buy one off of eBay or something like that, you pop it in here, and on the other end you've got this handy dandy little USB plug. Right. And basically, very simply, what it does is it's two actually as well. There's one on either side, so you can have two player games. And basically what it does, it allows you to play SNES games on your Mac and your PC as well, but we don't have to worry about that. All you need to do then is, and this sort of gets at possibly a legal gray area, but I would support if you have bought the game previously, you probably are maybe okay. But you go away and you can find emulators, SNES emulators and things like that around the web, and you can find the games. And then the controller just works. You sit, make it full screen, and it's like you're playing a SNES on your Mac. It's absolutely fantastic. And actually, if you look around Amazon, you can find ones that work for Xbox, like the original Xbox, Master System, NES, all that kind of stuff. And so you can plug your old controllers in and have a little bit of 80s nostalgia. And that SNES one, I'll put a link in the chat room, but I've completely lost my mouse. I can't find where I'm going. $12.95, and it's Amazon Prime, so it's free delivery if you're on Amazon Prime as well.
That's genius. Excellent. Is there a recommendation of a good emulator by any chance, Paul, that you've heard from, of course, a person who's done that and not you?
SNES 9X is one I've heard that works quite nicely. There's another one coming out that hasn't actually been, or I've not actually checked for a few weeks. It basically has a very kind of iBooks interface. So it actually shows all your games on like a kind of a bookshelf when you've got all the emulators installed. But I've only seen screenshots of that because it's still not been released yet. I believe that's 9X as well. But SNES 9X, and if you do a Google for it, you should be able to find it.
Excellent. Good pick, mate. Bloody good pick. Follow that, Jeff Gamet.
All right. I have a stylus this week since we had all of our art talk last week. This is one I just started playing with. This one is called the True Glide. And it's True Glide Pro, actually. And the difference between this and the what actually is my favorite general use stylus, which is the Wacom and Bamboo, is that this one has a it's a kind of a microfiber thing tip. So instead of having that rubbery tip, you have this, which is kind of a fabric-y thing. So it gives a different feel to the way the stylus works when you're drawing or writing. The end comes off. So the tips are replaceable, which is nice. You can also get this black piece in silver. So if you wanted to have an all silver stylus, you could do that. And it feels well built. It balances nicely, and it's comfortable to hold, and it feels nice when you draw. So this isn't replacing my Wacom and Bamboo, but this is now right up there as a suggestion. I'm totally happy to give to people as a good, durable, general use stylus. And they're like $30.
I was going to say $29.95 seems like a good price.
Yeah, I think it's reasonably priced for what it is. Absolutely.
Excellent. Available in the UK as well. Batwench has just put a link in the chat room. And,
oh, awesome.
That link's not gone anywhere. We'll find the price. We'll let you know. Link Tech. Oh, True Glide. Here we Link Tech True Glide Duo Stylus, £19.40. So that's about right on the conversion as well, which is a bloody miracle.
Now the Duo is not the one that I have.
Oh,
the
which
Duo,
do you have?
The back end comes off, and it's also a pen. The one that I have is, hold on. Here we go. I have a link. I will drop it into the chat room for everyone.
Right. So True Glide microfiber, it's available at linktech.com, linktec. And the micro
there you go.
Fiber one, I can't see. Never mind. We'll find it. We'll get something in there. Don't worry. We'll find something in the chat rooms, in the show notes. And Paul, if you could stick 9X in the show notes, that'd be brilliant as well. Kelly, what do you have for us, mate?
I have a magazine, oddly. It's The Loop. We all know The Loop. We mm-hmm. know The Beard. We know The Yup. We know The Nope. And now Jim has curated some content and put together a long-form magazine. Jim Dalrymple and Peter Cohen, they've released this. It's not a left-handed magazine before the chat room even asks me. It's plain old, not even necessarily so much tech stuff. And it's just some nice longer form writing. It's similar to the magazine from Marco Arment. And I like it a lot. It's $2. And you can't go wrong. It's Loop content. I mean, I don't know what else I need to tell you about it besides that. It's pretty fantastic, and it's got some interesting stuff in it. I can't wait to see what else they end up publishing as part of the magazine. But for $2 in like a month, you know, that's totally worthwhile to me. So I'm totally into it. And, of course, read everything like the day I picked it up, and I can't stop recommending it. There were a couple of initial hitches with the app and the subscriptions, but now that's all been sorted out, and I like it. So there you go.
Excellent. Another good pick. We're doing well today.
You can find more information about it at loopinsight.com/magazine.
Loop magazine. Very good. DHM. Follow all that, mate.
Follow that. Well, we're sticking with the art theme again from last week.
Good.
And the thing is, it's a duo of what essentially is a free trial and a paid-for app, which is, I mean, obviously the iPad is getting all the glory and the press as the drawing device du jour. But, of course, the Mac, people have been creating professional art on the Mac for years before then. And with the addition of a decent graphics tablet from Wacom, of which there are plenty now that are pretty reasonably, you know, under sub-£100, mark, and Sketchbook Express for free off the Mac App Store. And once you've had a quick go on that Sketchbook Pro 6 for the paid version, probably the easiest way into drawing on your Mac. I mean, I've used a load of them from Photoshop on Round, and I find if, particularly if your drawing style tends more towards the graphic and comic, then Sketchbook Pro from Autodesk is the tippity-toppity of that one, as far as I'm concerned. It's got an interesting, in air quotes, and completely non-Mac interface, which is kind of taken from the iPad and iPhone version as well. But it does take an hour or so to get the hang of it, and it certainly takes more than an hour or so to get the hang of using a tablet with a Mac. But both of those things are well worth doing, because it's an excellent app, and if you can have some great fun drawing on there.
Good. Cheers, mate. Excellent pick again. We've done. It's only me to let us down now, then. I was just thinking, do they do a ZX Spectrum emulator?
Yeah, they do.
For
yeah.
Mac?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I'll pay for that link. Jet Set Willy. Oh. My pick, and I was in two minds here with this one, because we're great mates with the people down at Stick Sports. They listen to the show and we recommend their apps because they're really, really good guys and girls, and they do a great job in making very playable Morning Motion style applications. They've released last week Stick Cricket Premier League, which is kind of trying to follow the Indian Premier League format. You get put in charge of a team and you get to play as well and hit all the balls and hit all the shots and be the manager. And there's obviously some method of getting new players and new training and that kind of stuff, which is where the money comes in. And then there's in-app purchases that you can buy, but you do win money for winning games or for hitting numbers of sixes and that kind of stuff. I was a bit disappointed to start off with, because I got the impression from game one, I was chasing 240 in 10 overs, which is 24 and over, which is impossible. There is no way you're going to win that. And certainly on the first game. And I wrote to the guys and said, I felt a bit like I was being forced into an in-app purchase. He said, nope, you absolutely can play the game, all the way through without buying any extra cash, and you can still do well at it. The run chase totals go between 10 and over and 24 and over on a random algorithm. And if basically he said, if you got 24 and over to start with, God hates you. So it was just me. But there's loads of ways of playing, and there's loads of things to do. You can get training, not get training, buy new players, not new players. There's a managerial element to it. And it's the same stick cricket game, which I love and Will Green loves. So if you'd like to go and get it, Stick Cricket SPL in the iTunes store. It's free of charge, so you can play this game free of charge. It's the same kind of format as all the other stick cricket games that have been. So all I need them to do is get on with stick baseball. I want stick baseball. Come on. How many years have I been saying stick baseball, and where are we? Nowhere. See? On it now. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Wheatley?
You can find me on Twitter at Paul Wheatley, and you can find me on The Gamer Show on this network. On Wednesday night, we are doing a special for the Microsoft announcement, so it should cover all that you want to know about the new Xbox, which has been released on, well, not, sorry, excuse me, it's being announced on Tuesday night. So we're going, we'd normally do the show on Sunday, but we're moving out a couple of days so we can talk about that. And you can also find me on occasion on the iOS show.
Right, and you know that we've got a Mixlr account, so you could set up a Mixlr account and broadcast to the Mixlr page, the live page, with just audio only, if you want to, for that event.
I have no idea what Mixlr is, so we'll be shocked about that, but...
MIXLR.com.
Okay.
Jeff, where are you, sir?
Okay, yep.
I'm hanging out at MacObserver.com. You know, when you're managing editor, you kind of have to hang out at your place. So anyhow, MacObserver.com. You can also find me on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamut on both of those. And you can find me at Fresh Brewed Tales as well. That's where I write about all the crazy stuff that I see at coffee shops. And it's all real.
Oh, dear. Never mind. There are people out in the world that need help.
Yes, Kelly, indeed.
Where are you, Kelly?
You can find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso. And you can also find me occasionally writing something for the unofficial Apple weblog over at tuwa.com. You can also find me hosting their podcast on Sunday evenings, my time. And you can occasionally find me on the Angry Mac Bastard podcast, which is a lovely podcast and full of salty language and fighting tech press stupid.
Good go.
Really happy.
Excellent. And last but my name is Luke, Chucky Blocky DHM. Dr. Choppy Mac.
I'm here. Yeah, actually, funnily enough, if you do meet me in real life, this is how I talk.
It's how you look as well after a couple of beers.
You remember at the bash last time, people were surprised I was talking like all day.
There was a few people at the bash don't remember.
Yes.
They did. Yes.
We are coming to the bash this year.
He's not invited, and I blocked him on Twitter now.
So. Dr. Happy Mac.
You're at Dr. Happy Mac on Twitter, and Mac and More if you want your
No, there's
Mac
nothing there. I've got a domain with no website on it.
Just look at Dapter Mac, Happy Mac. Get in touch with him, offer him some money, and he'll give you Mac advice. Yeah, that'll do. We'll be back again next week with the Mac Show, but I don't know when. The problem is I'm working every day. I haven't worked every day for a while. But I've got 5 days working next week. I can't do the shows at all. Now, Carl Madden is taking over the big show, so that'll be at the normal time on Thursday night. There won't be any problem with that at all, and Joda Max is going to switch it for him. I'm going to do the photo show when I get an hour to sit down and record it, and I'll just broadcast it live, and if anyone watches, then great. If not, no worries. And then the Max show, we need to try and figure out when that is, but we've got a calendar. If you go to the live page... BritishTechNetwork.com/live. There is a Google calendar you can subscribe to there, and we will put the showtime up in there, and you can see when it comes on. All the showtimes are in there, and there should be a trigger. I need to redo them. I think the big show and the Mac show have lapsed. But we'll do it next week, but I don't know when. It'll be me doing it, though, because Carl can't do it on the Friday night. So we'll figure it out. We'll give you a call. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to the Mac Show on the British Tech Network. The biggest and best network in the whole of the UK.